Welcome to today's discussion on changing the way we talk about food. The way we talk about food matters. This discussion provides insight into how the early years curriculum can support children to develop lifelong positive relationships with food through encouraging curiosity.
Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on the lands of the Wurundjeri people and pay our respects to elders past and present. If you're experiencing an eating disorder or disordered eating, this discussion may not be the right one for you now. But stay tuned as there'll be more recordings coming. Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Laura. We're both population health officers with the EACH Prevention and Population Health team. We both have postgraduate university qualifications in nutrition and extensive experience supporting children and families to find joy in eating well. This discussion is based on current research and our experience and observations working in this area. In this session, we'll introduce the concept that how we talk about food matters. We'll discuss what we can do to create supportive early years environments to help children foster positive relationships with food through creating curious learners. You might also like to listen to our parenting podcast, where we discuss ways adults can support children around mealtimes and getting them involved in the kitchen. So, Rachel, why are we talking about changing the way we talk about food to children?
We all want our children to grow up and enjoy a variety of nutritious foods and have the energy to grow, play, learn, and be the best versions of themselves. Early year services play a really important role in influencing children's eating behaviour, including providing opportunities for role modelling, education, and also food exploration. We eat to celebrate special events such as weddings, birthdays, and religious celebrations. So eating helps us to learn about new cultures, and food also connects us with our family and friends.
Yeah, so food is more than just food. It can be love, celebration, and it creates memories for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So the goal is to help children to foster a positive relationship with food over time. Current best practice recommendations is more about food and what role it plays in a child's life and less about nutrition. Research shows us that this leads to healthier eating behaviours in children by listening to their bodies, and as a result, they eat what they need and feel the joy when they eat. We know food relationships are complex and everyone has different experiences, feelings, and requirements.
Before we move on, let's take a minute to think about what food means to you. Maybe take a moment to close your eyes and think about food. What words come to your mind when you hear the word food? The types of words that come up will hold an emotional reaction for all of us. Is it love, joy, family, connection? It might be fear, energy, deprivation, choice, or maybe stress. Were there other words that came up for you?
Yeah, so what you're saying, Laura, is our feelings and emotional responses to these words are likely to influence the way we talk about food.
Yeah, exactly. So being mindful of what food means to us and how each person is going to think differently about it can really help us in the way we talk to children about food. We know that categorizing or labeling foods or using negative language when talking about food can potentially create feelings of exclusion, uneasiness, or even shame in individuals. And this can ultimately lead to a challenging relationship with food and eating. What about the influence of social media, Rachel?
So over the past 20 to 25 years, social media has become a big part of many people's day-to-day lives and the ways in which they access health information. So in talking about this topic, we often use the term diet culture. So diet culture refers to the ever-changing myths about food and our bodies. On social media, we can be bombarded with messages and content which shows that one's body weight automatically equals health and that food can be categorized into either good or bad or healthy or unhealthy. So because of diet culture, food messaging can become really confusing and send conflicting messages about food and health, which can have deep and far-reaching impacts on adults as well as children and their relationship with food and their bodies. You may be familiar with headlines such as foods that are good or bad for you, weight loss stories, and so on. Food is often portrayed as an all-or-nothing approach. When we label or categorize food such as healthy or unhealthy, good or bad, this type of messaging can be really confusing for children, and it can lead to an altered relationship with food, such as picky eating. Our discussion today provides an opportunity to think about reframing the way that we teach children about food. Laura, why has there been a shift in the way that we talk about food?
Well, talking to children about food may seem really simple on the surface, but the language we use can have a positive or negative impact on them. Children are concrete or literal thinkers. Their thinking focuses on their experiences, so what they can see, touch, hear, smell, or taste.
So if we say, for example, that food is bad for you, young children can think, if I eat that food, I'm bad?
Yeah, exactly. And over time, this can lead to negative relationships with food. Food should be about exploration and fun, enjoyment, and listening to their bodies.
So does this also extend to children's understanding of health conditions?
Yeah, it does, because it's hard for them to visualise what the future may look like to them. And because of that, health messaging, such as eating X type of food will make you healthy, is not meaningful for children.
So children can relate to learning about what, when, how, and why we eat, rather than focusing on the nutritional aspects of food and eating?
Yeah, that's right. For some children, also thinking about what food can do for their body can be useful. For example, eating well can help you to go, grow, and glow. Before we start talking about how we speak about food, it's worth touching on the stages that children need to go through to accept a new food. So children need to master each step of this before moving on to the next. The first stage of this process is where children start looking at the food. That might be, for example, having food on the dining table, or for infants and toddlers, it might be watching what adults are eating. The next stage is interacting with the food, which might be, for example, stirring the food using a spoon, or for infants and toddlers, it might be playing with the food while sitting at their high chair. The next step is smelling the food, and this may even just be noticing the smell of the food cooking in the kitchen, or perhaps sniffing the food. Next comes tasting the food, which might include simply touching the food to their lips, licking the food, or taking a very small bite and perhaps even spitting it out. And the final stage is actually eating the food. So it's quite a complex process.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that it can take children between 10 to 20 exposures to move through to the next step. So allowing them time to do this and working through at their own pace is really important.
Agree. Rachel, what's neutral language when it comes to talking about food?
Well, neutral language focuses on describing food without the pressure to eat or labelling foods such as good or bad, healthy or unhealthy. It also means that all foods have the same moral value. It's just food. It also removes the need for words such as naughty, junk, or treats. And this approach really helps children to become intuitive eaters.
So if we were to put this into practice, let's use an apple as an example, we would call it an apple without putting an emotional label in front of it, such as it's good for you or I don't like apples.
Exactly, Laura. So to further encourage this approach, we encourage children to use their senses to describe the apple. For example, what does the apple look like? What does the apple smell like? What does the apple feel like? What does it sound like when you bite into that apple? What does it taste like? So, Laura, some people may feel that food neutrality could ignore nutrition and health. What do you think?
Well, we know that eating a variety of foods from the five food groups is really important for a child to learn, play, and grow. And when we provide a neutral approach to food education, the division of responsibility comes into play. So this is a concept developed by Alan Satter, who was a dietitian who committed her career to supporting parents and carers to feed their children. So under the division of responsibility, she says that adults are the providers of food. They decide what's served, when, and where. And a child then decides if and how much they'll eat.
Yes, exactly. Adults also have the responsibility for creating environments that support health and well-being, including having nutritious food and drink options available for children.
And an example of this is at early years services, where the menu is developed by experienced staff to meet the nutritional needs of young children. So in the background, they might be guided by the Healthy Eating Advisory Service menu planning guidelines. Children aren't involved in that process, and it links back to the adults having the responsibility to provide the food. The children decide if they'll eat and how much they'll eat.
What does a positive and inclusive approach to teaching food and nutrition look like, Laura?
So it involves focusing on exploring food with curiosity and without emotive labels. It also includes avoiding activities that sort foods into healthy or unhealthy categories or similar.
Yeah, it's interesting because actually the research shows that children are less likely to try foods that are labelled as healthy and will often assume these foods are less tasty.
Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it?
Mm.
This approach also includes embracing that eating looks different to everyone, depending on their family context, their culture, their access to food, availability of food, their personal taste, allergies, and personal life experiences as well. And it also includes celebrating all the ways that food supports our physical, social, mental, and spiritual well-being. So, Rachel, what else can we do to support children to learn about food in a neutral way?
So we mentioned using a lens of curiosity helps children to explore foods in their own time and in their own way. We can provide a supportive environment to help children to explore food in a number of ways. Some of these include meeting children where they're at in their food journey. We also discussed earlier that encouraging food exploration by using an open-ended questions and encouraging children to use their senses where exploring food. So, for example, with the apple, what does the apple smell like? What does it taste like? And so on. We can also encourage children to learn about food from different food cultures. We can talk to them about food in a neutral way, such as not demonising or elevating certain foods. And we can support children in the garden to grow food, as well as in the kitchen to prepare food in age-appropriate ways. Laura, have you got any other ideas to support the neutral food approach?
Yeah, so where possible, we can support families to extend that neutral language into the home environment. We can also avoid commenting on the foods that children have in their lunchbox or foods that they choose to eat from the meal provided, including how much they eat and the order in which they eat it. Finally, we can provide enough time and a positive eating environment for children to sit down and really enjoy their food with their peers. And as educators, eating with children is a really great way to connect and role model enjoyment of eating, including social norms such as table manners.
There's also evidence-based programs such as the Achievement Program that can provide guidance to help your service and create a healthy food culture. If you'd like to know more information about the Achievement Program, please get in touch with us. But before we finish up, are there any other references or resources that you can suggest if people wanted to find out more about this, Laura?
Yeah, so we've provided a tip sheet along with this podcast, which covers a number of references. But some of our favourites are the Achievement Program, as you've mentioned, has a really great range of resources attached to it. The Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden Program have great resources, including their three books. Teach Food First is a Canadian resource that focuses on curiosity, skill development, and food exploration. And there's also a great Instagram page called Kids Eat in Colour. She's a dietitian and talks a lot about this topic.
Mm.
So if you have any questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. The best way to reach us is via our email at prevention@each.com.au. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.